volunteered to speak about something you really like, think you understand, it's a whole lot easier than getting asked to speak about something you don't have a clue what you're talking about. So that's the reason. Are you ready? Okay. I think Norm Webb Jr. mentioned last month that if we don't understand history, we're doomed to repeat it. And someone else has said that if you don't know where you've been, you won't know where you're going. And that great American Yogi Berra says, if you don't know where you're going, when you get there, you may not know where you are. And so I think there's a lot of truth in all of that. And sometimes I wonder if we know where we are. But I think it's important that we go back and try to understand where we came from. We have people here from various parts of the country. But I want to deal specifically with how the gospel came to North Alabama. We're going to take this pie and spread it around. And I don't know how organized I am. I've never presented the material. But there's some things I'd like to share with you. My family came into North Alabama in the early 1800s, and so this has been the home for my folks going back to about 1810, 1812. And the church has been in North Alabama since, I think, 1810. I think the first church was in Huntsville in 1810, and which disagrees with a lot of conventional wisdom. So I want us to look at this subject and see if we can understand how the gospel came to Alabama, and also look at some of the great gospel preachers that came out of North Alabama, or great gospel preachers that preached in North Alabama. I don't really know where to begin when we start talking about church history. David and I were talking coming up here about John Glass, Robert Sandeman, the Haldanes, some of those guys that whose names never get mentioned in the Restoration Movement. But James O'Kelly, I think, had some influence in the gospel coming to North Carolina, and I'll try to tie him in a little later on as to how he had some influence in that. O'Kelly broke with the Methodists in 1792. And by 1794, decided that he needed to try to get rid of denominational names. Rice Haggard happened to be there, and Alton and I got to see the Rice Haggard house up in Birchville, Kentucky, a couple of weeks ago. He suggested that they just call themselves Christians. And the interesting thing about Rice Haggard is that he shows up at Cane Ridge 10 years later and suggests the same thing to Barton Stone. Why don't you just call yourself Christians? So I think there's some connection with James O'Kelly. So many people that came to North Alabama, families like mine, came out of North Carolina, across Georgia, into Alabama, and on into Mississippi and Texas. Several of them stayed in this area. You have to talk about Barton Stone when you talk about the history of North Alabama. Certainly, he had an impact on the gospel. He was at Cane Ridge in 1801, the time of the Great Kentucky Revival. And the estimates of this revival range somewhere between 15 and 40,000 people showed up for this revival. And the 40,000 estimate was by an army quartermaster. And that's his job, to determine people and rations and so forth, of how many wagons of food came in. The people stayed until the animals ate up all the grass around Cane Ridge. And they finally left. This is a picture of the old building. Just not advancing. Is there an advance on this? Okay. Of course, Cane Ridge now, the building is inside of this stone structure that was built in the 1950s, I think about 1956. I don't know if we're having a problem with this or it's not coordinating very well. This is... Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. That's, of course, the original Cane Ridge building. Stone broke with the Presbyterians. In fact, this year is the 200th anniversary of the last will and testament of the Springfield Presbytery. And in that document. He says, we will that this body die, be dissolved, and sink into union with the body of Christ at large. And this was one of the, of course, landmark documents in the Restoration Movement. He mentions the Church of Christ two or three times, using that language in that document. Martin Stone left the Presbyterians in 1804. He preached baptism for remission of sins. He did that until about 1807. And he quit preaching it. For 25 years, he quit preaching baptism for remission of sins. He said it was like pouring cold water on those in the pew. So he just quit preaching. It wasn't until about 1832 when Campbell and Stone groups united that, again, he began preaching baptism for remission of sins. He joined the Campbell movement, or these two movements merged in 1832. He influenced the church in North Alabama. He came to Limestone County on at least two occasions. He preached at the Octagon Log Church out in the Browns Ferry area. And he also preached to the Cherokee Indians. He was fluent in Cherokee. And so we know of at least two occasions. And I mentioned this. His nephew is buried in Lawrence in Limestone County. John Baird died while working on the Muscle Shoals to Decatur Canal in a construction accident. This was Stone's sister's daughter's husband. And he came and helped his niece settle her affairs in Limestone County and to bury her husband, John Baird. This is in the Ripley Cemetery. And some of you probably know where that's one of the most beautiful old cemeteries I've been to. It's well kept, very nice. Stone published The Christian Messenger from 1826 to 1844, and the quality is very poor. Benny can tell you that. He's tried to scan some of this, and the quality of the messenger is really hard to scan even today. But it did have a wide influence because many people read it. And as they read this restoration material, they began to understand that there was a difference between the religious practices that they were accustomed to and the things that Stone was teaching. The very first issue, volume 1, number 1, points out that James Matthews of Florence, Alabama, was one of the agents for the Christian Messenger. Now, the reason for that is James Matthews was a student of Barton Stone's at Rittenhouse Academy in Georgetown, Kentucky, and they were very close. There were other people that came to Florence or Lauderdale County that were students of Stone as well. The Campbell movement really had very little effect in North Alabama. I started out by saying it didn't have any effect, and then I got to the point that I think I'm just satisfied with saying it had very little effect. When people call you a Campbellite, they don't have a clue that Campbell did not influence a single church in North Alabama. And if he did, I hadn't found it. And let me say this. If you go up in the Washington area, you see the signs that George Washington slept here. Well, it's kind of like that with Campbell. Alexander Campbell preached here. Alexander Campbell gets credited for preaching a lot of places he never even heard of. And some of those in North Alabama. To the best of my knowledge, he never even came through Alabama but once. And that was from Augusta, Georgia, on the way to New Orleans. And that was through the Montgomery area. Never even came through here. We start with Thomas Campbell. He was a Cedar Presbyterian. Actually, he was an anti-burger Cedar Presbyterian. I think he was a Olight anti-burger Cedar Presbyterian. I'm not really sure about that. But he came to America in 1807. He was tried for heresy because he allowed a non-seceder to take the communion. And he left the Presbyterians and joined the Redstone Baptist Association. Well, he is credited for writing the Declaration of Address. He published this about 1809. It was at the printer when Alexander Campbell arrived in America. And this was one of the great documents of the Restoration period. There are 13 propositions, just highlighted a few of them there. Number one, the Church of Christ is essentially, intentionally, and constitutionally one. Don't have time to read all of these, but you can go down through there and look at them. Number 8, I probably should have highlighted. He said that faith in Jesus Christ as the Son of God is a sufficient profession to entitle a man or woman to become a member of the Church of Christ. And so that's at the point where he was religiously at that time. I think the next slide has to do with Alexander Campbell. In 1808, Alexander Campbell and the rest of the family left, coming to America. And they had not gone very far. They were shipwrecked off the coast of Scotland near Glasgow. And while Campbell was there, during that year, he availed himself the opportunities to study at the Glasgow University. And so it was there that he came under the influence of Greville Ewing, who taught him about the organization of the New Testament Church. And it was here he refused communion in the Presbyterian Church. At the same time in Scotland that Alexander Campbell was coming to the conclusion that the Presbyterians were wrong, his father in America, Thomas Campbell, had come to the same conclusion. And when they met, there was this moment of tension, you know, because both of them had changed positions religiously. And then they realized they had both come to the same conclusion, even though they were an ocean apart, which is really an interesting story. Sermon on the Law in 1816 is really the turning point with Alexander Campbell. If you've never studied the Sermon on the Law, you can do that. Dan Petty, if you go to the Florida College website, look up Dan Petty and Sermon on the Law. He has a treatise on that and presented some material on that at the lectures a couple of years ago. Basically, Campbell came to the conclusion about the Old Testament that's very common to us today, that we're not under the Old Testament. Well, the Baptists could not handle that. And he realized at that point there was such a division, they could never solve their problems. And but that the backlash of that was so great that I think that's what prompted Campbell to really pursue the position that he had was taking. This is where Bethany was located. The Campbells actually came into Washington, Pennsylvania, in the western part of Pennsylvania, and over in that little panhandle up there in Virginia, what is now West Virginia, is where Bethany is located. But I think this is an interesting point, that there were 200 churches of Christ in America by 1810. Now think about that. There were 200 churches that were teaching the truth before Alexander Campbell and Thomas Campbell ever left the Baptist Association. And, of course, Alexander Campbell got here in 1809, so I think that's an interesting point. Campbell studied baptism. He really began his study of baptism when his first child was born, and he was dealing with this question of infant baptism. He studied it out. Finally wrote this book, Antecedents and Consequences. Benny scanned this into the computer and has this available if you'd like to get a copy of it. I've read that. It's a very interesting book. He also participated in a number of debates. I have the McCalla debate, and It was really a bloodletting is all it was. He slaughtered McCalla. There really wasn't much of a debate to it. And McCalla took the infant baptism position, Campbell. The interesting thing about this is that this was the first time that Campbell had used the argument that baptism was for the remission of sins. He began publishing on a regular basis in 1823 with the Christian Baptist. He published the Christian Baptist from 1823 to 1829. 1830, he started the Millennial Harbinger, and this was published from 1830 to 1870, 4 years after the death of Campbell. And most of the things that he did in his life pretty well documented in these books. And I'm glad I've got copies of both of these, the Christian Baptist and the Millennial Harbinger. It's easy to go back and read some of these things. Campbell's influence in North Alabama was almost non-existent. Two guys that I'm familiar with, Lauderdale County history, claim to have been baptized by Alexander Campbell, John Dickey Wade and William Henry Wade. In fact, Gene Jones is a direct descendant of John Henry Wade. Some of us here know the Jones family. Alexander Campbell's wife did live in North Alabama after Campbell died. And I really don't have time to talk about Lawrence County. I wish we did. But their daughter, Decima, she was named Decima because she was the 10th daughter, lived in Cortland with her husband, J.J. Barclay, Dr. J.J. Barclay. And after Campbell died, Mrs. Campbell came to Cortland and lived with her daughter, and it's there that she wrote reminiscences of Alexander Campbell, and I have this book. I think it was published in 1882. But the church was really strong in Lawrence County. People like James Madison Pickens, who started, who actually brought T.B. Larimore to North Alabama to preach, to teach at Mountain Home. Also, J.T. Barclay, who was the first missionary of the American Christian Missionary Society, moved to Lawrence County in 1868, started the church at Wheeler, and preached there for several years. He was the father of J.J. Barclay, the father-in-law of Decima Campbell. I'm sorry? One of them was a ambassador, I believe. And I think J.T. Barclay was an ambassador to some country. I'm not sure which one. Walter Scott influenced two churches in North Alabama. And he's a name that we really don't know. Some of you people from up in the Ohio area would probably be more familiar with Walter Scott. This guy probably understood baptism before Thomas Campbell and Alexander Campbell had a clue what baptism was for. He learned this from George Forrester, who was a Haldanian. He had come under the influence of the Haldanes. And when Walter Scott came to America from Scotland, he got a job teaching in George Forrester's school, and George Forrester taught him baptism for remission of sins. It was Walter Scott who convinced Alexander Campbell to use that argument in the McCalla debate. And so he understood baptism for remission of sins long before the Campbells did. Walter Scott published The Evangelists, and two churches in North Alabama came into existence as a result of the writings in The Evangelists, and that is the Morrisville Church of Christ and the Tuscumbia Church of Christ. In Tuscumbia, you had Dr. W.H. Wharton, who read The Evangelists and learned the truth. In Mooresville, you had Dr. J.H. Dunn, who read The Evangelists and learned the truth. And so they were influenced through the writings of Walter Scott. Now, let's try to get to North Alabama. You see Nashville up there in this area right here. And we want to come down to Murfreesboro. You see that on I-24. And then come on down to this area here. You see Manchester right here and McMinnville right there. All right, right in the middle there is the little town of Viola, Tennessee. The gospel had not come south of that point as of yet. In 1805, there was a church started in Viola, Tennessee. And the reason for that is because there was a road that ran from Lexington, Kentucky to Huntsville, Alabama, and turned west and went to Florence. It was sometimes called the Florence to Lexington Road. That was the North and South Road. There was a road coming out of North Carolina that intersected that road at Viola, Tennessee. And some interesting things began to happen there. A town started growing up around it. People said, we need a church. Somebody said, what kind of church are we going to build? And they said, why don't we just build a church and do what they did in the New Testament? It's a good idea. And that's how the Church of Christ began in Viola, Tennessee in 1805. That was the old Philadelphia church. Now, the Prices from Viola, from old Philadelphia, are the ones who came into Alabama and started the Rocky Springs Church. So you see the connection there between old Philadelphia and Rocky Springs. Now, this Smith never preached in Alabama that I know of, but I just put him up here to remind you this is how he got to Huntsville in 1812. He came down that road, straight into Madison County, because Alabama lands were opening up. The only reason he came to Alabama was to make money. And when he got here, of course, his cabin burned two of his children to death. His wife died here, and he almost died before he got back to Kentucky. It was after he got back to Kentucky that he learned the truth. But the old Philadelphia meeting house, the one that's there now, was built in 1830. And this is a picture of it, and somebody's going to burn it if somebody don't do something to preserve it. like they did at Cane Ridge. There's just so, I'm afraid that Old Mulkey's going to burn because these places are just sitting out there with nobody around them, and that would be a great loss. But the old Philadelphia church is still used some today. No one meets there on a regular basis. But I want you to look at this who's who of gospel preachers that preached at Old Philadelphia. You got William Price and Hugh Price, and they're the ones that really started the work at Rocky Springs. You got W.D. Carnes, who was the president of the University of Tennessee. Wouldn't call that at the time. Later, he was president of Franklin College. He was president of Burt College, one of the great educators in the state of Tennessee. Talbert Fanning, Jesse Sewell, William Sewell, J.L. Trott, Joshua K. Spear, David Lipscomb, E.G. Sewell, E.A. Elam, Marshall Keeble. Been a lot of names over the years, people that preached at the old Philadelphia church. And I want you to notice how it influenced Rocky Springs. If you come on down to Rocky Springs, and it's claimed to be the first church in the state of Alabama, established in 1807, and that's what's on the plaque on the front of the building. I don't think it's correct. And I think it's a little early, and other people do too. But the reason for that is because William Price, who started the church at Rocky Springs, came to Rocky Springs in 1811. He was baptized at Old Philadelphia in 1811. Now, the Antioch community started in 1807. But Rocky Springs was William Price's plantation about a mile from Antioch, and he named his plantation Rocky Springs. I think the date on that ought to be 1811 rather than 1807. I believe the gospel came to Alabama through the teaching of Benjamin Lynn. And if Benjamin Lynn had his own biographer like Daniel Boone, you would never heard of Daniel Boone, and you'd all know who Benjamin Lynn is. He's sometimes called the Daniel Boone of Southern Kentucky. Benjamin Lynn came into Kentucky in 1773 to Bardstown, Kentucky, with a fellow named John Ritchie, probably kin to me. They came for the purpose of making whiskey. And he was a scout during the Revolutionary War. He was a personal friend of George Rogers Clark, who was the brother of William Clark of the Lewis and Clark Expedition. And if you've ever lived in Kentucky, around Kentucky, you've heard of No Lynn River and No Lynn Lake. They were named for Lynn, for Benjamin Lynn, because he was held up in one of the forts there, I think at Harrodsburg, and he would slip out at night. The Indians had him surrounded. He would slip out at night to get game for them, and he could speak the language of the Indians. They didn't know who they were talking to. He'd find out what was going on. One time he didn't come back. Any report from Lynn? No Lynn. This went on for several days. No Lynn. No Lynn. And that became known as the No Lynn River. We crossed it when we came back from Kentucky, and I told Alton this story. He was a Baptist preacher. In 1807, he came to the conclusion that he needed to be baptized for remission of sins. He walked 80 miles to Cane Ridge and asked Stone to baptize him, and he did. Now, he began to preach the gospel, and he moved to Huntsville, Alabama in 1810. We're talking about the very beginning of the Alabama territory, 1810. Alabama became a state in 1819. And he died in Huntsville in 1814. Now, knowing something about this man and how strong he was and how strong his children were, I'm convinced he had to be a gospel preacher in Huntsville in 1810. Whether they had a building to meet in, I do not know. But knowing something about the man, I believe this is how the church came to Alabama. Well, he died in 1814, and his family moved to Lauderdale County in 1816, or what would become Lauderdale County. Benjamin Lynn influenced John Mulkey, the old Mulkey Meeting House up there at Tompkinsville, Kentucky. In 1809, Mulkey, in that Baptist church there, the Stockton Valley Baptist Association, came to the conclusion that that baptism was for remission of sins. There were 200 members of the church there. And he got up and told them, said, you know, if you want to follow me, we can go out this door. If you want to remain with the Baptist church, you go out that door. 150 of the 200 people went out of the door with John Mulkey. Benjamin Lynn influenced him. And if you read Christians on the Oregon Trail, that's one of the new books out, it's been out a couple of years, he mentions that this was an influence to Thomas Crawford McBride and also John Philip Mulkey. They carried the gospel to Oregon. So the gospel, through Benjamin Lynn, came to Alabama. It also went to Oregon, and I'm going to show you in a minute that it went to Texas through Benjamin Lim. This is the old Mulkey Meeting House. We made these pictures a couple of weeks ago. The grave of Hannah Boone Pennington. Daniel Boone's sister was a member of the church there. She was one of those people that walked out with John Mulkey. In fact, John Mulkey had performed her wedding ceremony back in North Carolina. So they were good friends of the Mulkeys for a number of years. Ended up in that same area. Well, Benjamin Lim died in Madison County in 1814. He had two daughters, and these two daughters moved into Lauderdale County. Now, Esther Chisholm was married to John Chisholm. Her husband, her father-in-law, was Doublehead's Indian agent, or was his agent, in Lauderdale County in 1816, or really from about 1800 on. Doublehead was killed about 1807, murdered by his own people. But he had all the land between Elk River and Cypress Creek on the north side of the Tennessee River, 10 miles to the north, which is a pretty good chunk of Lauderdale County. And so you couldn't go into that area. If you travel 72 through Athens, just after you get to Clements High School, you'll see this sign on the highway. Fort Hampton was one of the most unusual forts in America. It was designed to keep white people off Indian lands and protect Indians. People were trying to come out of Madison County and Limestone County into what is now Lauderdale County. And the law was protecting that land until 1816. In 1816, the fort was not needed, and so these families were able to come into Lauderdale County. Well, John Chisholm married Esther, Benjamin Lynn's daughter, and they settled a few miles north of Florence. One of the main roads in Lauderdale County is Chisholm Road, running north up to Waynesboro. And the Chisholm Cemetery up there is one of the oldest white cemeteries in the state of Alabama. And buried there is Esther Chisholm, Benjamin Lynn's daughter. And the other stone is Dorinda, their daughter, who married Benjamin Franklin Hall. And if you've ever studied church history, you're familiar with Benjamin Franklin Hall. And so we'll just jump over to Hall for just a minute. He studied dentistry, and he came to the conclusion that baptism was for remission of sins after reading the Campbell-McCalla debate. He was up in the Tompkinsville area up there when he came to that conclusion. And he was ordained to preach by Barton Stone, studied dentistry in Florence, married Dorinda Chisholm. He converted Talbert Fanning. He traveled with Alexander Campbell after his wife died, and he started the church in Little Rock. There was a Baptist church there. He went in, preached, converted it, and later on he preached in Memphis for a number of years, went on to Texas, and the story gets really interested and so and confused after that. But here's the family. You've got Esther and Rachel, the two children of Benjamin Lynn. And we talked about Dorinda over here marrying Benjamin F. Hall, but the other side of the family is really exciting. And let me go back and say this. The church at Rocky Springs, I don't know of any other group they influenced anywhere. But this group here influenced churches all over North Alabama and in Texas. You see, the family there, they're actually eight children. I'm only mentioning four of them. Solomon was the oldest, and he settled his father's estate in 1825 when he died. Benjamin Lynn de Spain was a great gospel preacher during that time. He had a son by the name of Alonzo Lynn de Spain, who was also a great gospel preacher. Randolph de Spain was killed at the Battle of Goliad. He was one of the 400 men that was lined up, and Santa Anna had them executed. And also in that group was the Cortland Red Rovers. If you've ever studied history of this area in Cortland, the Red Rovers were a group from Cortland, Alabama, that went out to fight for Texas independence. They were all killed, I think, except for the doctor that made it back. His life was spared. But let me tell you what happened. Now, the Chisholms went out north of Florence a little bit and started the Republican Church, which became the Cypress Creek Church, which is now the Stony Point Church of Christ. Rachel and Marshall de Spain went to Waterloo, which is in the western part of the county, and by 1835, that church had 300 members. Can you imagine a church with 300 members at that time? By 1840, there were 250 members at Cypress Creek. There are no churches that I know of at that time in Limestone County and Huntsville. Lauderdale County's just blowing up. There's a church at Barton's that has a brick building. There's a church on Bluewater Creek.
But this church disappears in 1835. 300 members. Nobody knows what happened to them until just a few years ago. Somebody was reading some papers at Texas Christian University, papers of Dr. Mansell Matthews, and the story is told, and it's fascinating. In the fall of 1835, evidently, Benjamin Linda Spain and Mansell Matthews, who preached for that group, were doing meetings up in Tennessee in the western part of the state. Evidently, it's there that they came across a man by the name of David Crockett. They contracted Crockett to take the Church of Christ at Waterloo to Texas in the fall of 1835. Crockett agreed to it. Crockett led that church with 300 members. We say 300 because I'll show you the documentation where they ordered 300 songbooks. That's a pretty good indicator of how many people you got from Barton Stone. Well, they headed to Texas. And it drove Crockett crazy because they'd want to stop and pray and have worship services every Sunday. They had all these kids and all these animals, and he was wanting to get to Texas so he could kill. Well, he managed to get there. He dumped them in Memphis and took off to Texas and got there by March of 36 and was killed at the Alamo. The church on horseback and wagons continued going to Texas. Got there in January or February of 1836. Landed at Clarksdale, Texas, made their way to Nacogdoches area, and started the First Church of Christ in Texas. Came from this group from Lauderdale County. And so the church that disappeared in Waterloo shows up in Texas in 1836. Well, the story really gets interesting with Hetty, who was just a young girl when the church went to Texas. She left with that group, and when she got to Texas, she married a man by the name of Joseph A. Clark. J.A. Clark was a gospel preacher there. She was the mother of Addison and Randolph Clark, and they donated the land for Addran College. How many of you have ever heard of Addran College? Okay. So this college starts as a result of these folks from Lauderdale County. Now, J.A. Clark was an interesting fellow, too. He opposed the Instruments of Music in the latter part of from 1850 to 1900, that period there when the instrument was really coming into the churches and taking churches by storm. By 1906, there were only two states where the Church of Christ was in the majority over the Christian church: Tennessee and Alabama. Alabama had 51% of its churches as Churches of Christ. Tennessee had 73%. Why? And before him, who taught him? Talbert Fanning. That's exactly right. So the influence of Fanning, and people don't ever forget the names Benjamin Franklin and Daniel Summers in the North, and Talbert Fanning and David Lipscomb in the South, because the church as you know it would not be existing today if it wasn't for guys like that who stood for the truth. This is a great story. I'm just going to tell you what happened. He was in his 80s when his sons wanted to bring this instrument into the church for a gospel meeting. They said the fellow holding the meeting liked the instrument. And this is from Eckstein's History of Texas. And here he was in his 80s, and they brought the instrument in, and when they started playing the instrument, old Brother Clark got up with his cane and started walking out. Two-thirds of the church went with him. That happened in churches all over America. And the Church of Christ lost most of the buildings. So many losses took place as a result of that. And that's the instrument. That's the melodeon that was introduced to the Midway Church in Midway, Kentucky in 1859 by Dr. L.L. Pinkerton, who bragged that he was the first person to ever bring the instrument into the Church of Christ. That's part one. One other point. What did Addran College become? Texas Christian University. Texas Christian University had its came into existence because of what happened right here in North Alabama. And we need to realize the influence of the church in North Alabama. So, now, next period, we're going to come back to North Alabama. We've gone all the way to Texas, and we've chased rabbits and so forth, but we're going to come back to North Alabama and look specifically at the development of the church in Lauderdale County and Colbert County. Then we're going to come back into Limestone County and the Madison